And we'll move now to the sixth case, Katsimos versus Garrett, 10-3650. For the appellant, Mr. Sutherland. I'll give you a minute to clear the lines here.
Morning. If it pleases the court, my name is Michael Sutherland, and I'm representing Dr. Alex Katsimos. The case is a case for false arrest and unlawful search. When the circuit court judge was first confronted with this question of whether or not Dr. Katsimos had violated the law, he asked State Trooper Michael Garrett to step forward, and he administered the oath. And it's worth looking, I think, and reminding ourselves that the oath says, "Do you solemnly swear or affirm under the penalty of perjury that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?" Had Mr. Garrett given the whole truth and nothing but the truth, there would be no probable cause. Dr. Alex Katsimos' medical career, professional medical practice, was destroyed by the callous and willful misrepresentation to the circuit court judge in seeking this warrant. Now, how do we know that? Ordinarily, as you'll see in the record, the police officers who work undercover would have the backup evidence of a transcript or recorded conversation of the interactions between the undercover officers, in this case, Mr. Morris and Ms. Yorty. They would have the transcript and the recording to back it up. And it would be more than just the presenting officer's word. But in this case, Mr. Garrett fabricates, if you take it at that, because there are three different versions, fabricates what really happened. And if it were not for Judge Stephen David prompting him after he makes his presentation, "Well, Mr. Garrett, did you attempt to make any recording?" "Well, as a matter of fact, Your Honor, we did, but I didn't punch the button right, and we didn't get any recordings." "You don't get any recordings? Well, they're kind of garbled. They're hard to understand." I'm paraphrasing, of course. But you do have the recordings. "Yes, sir, we do. And I made contemporaneous notes because I listened in on the recordings, and you have those notes somewhere." "Yes, I do." Now, as he goes through all of this, he makes a number of accusations which are completely unfounded and dishonest. How do we know that? Because after Dr. Katsimos was arrested on April the 10th, and the probable cause hearing was April the 9th, I believe, there was a medical licensing board hearing. There was a pursuit by the state through the Attorney General's office to remove Dr. Katsimos from the medical rolls and to take his license. The very testimony that was presented by the state through the Attorney General was the identical testimony that should have been captured by those Kelsets and the microcassettes. There are, as I say, three or four different versions that Mr. Garrett gives. He first says that Mr. Morris has a microcassette on him, but he tells the judge that they're both wired with Kelsets. And in fact, I think that's in the defendant's or appellee's brief, that there are two Kelsets. He tells the medical licensing board that he attempted to take and listen and transcribe, but he could only record and transcribe one of the meetings. That was a different version under oath than he told the circuit court judge. So you have one statement by Mr. Garrett saying he has no recordings that are audible, and then you have him reading from a transcript less than 2 weeks later at the medical licensing board. You have the presentation by the state of a detailed description of each of the six visits of Yorty and Morris, and you have a condensed version that Garrett gives the circuit court judge. The condensed version is dishonest, disingenuous, and omits many of the exculpatory facts which were presented voluntarily by these witnesses at the medical licensing board. There was a complete medical history taken each time. There's a complete physical taken each time. There was a complete interview of whether or not there are any side effects or any consequences to taking the medication that Dr. Gottsimo prescribed. That was captured in the reports. It was presented to the Medical Licensing Board, but it was not presented to the Circuit Court judge. In these six different visits, Dr. Gottsimo followed his protocol. He asked each of them how they were doing, whether, in Morris's case, whether he had actually followed through on his advice to go to an ophthalmologist, whether he was getting better better with his diet, whether he was getting some exercise, because he diagnosed him as being pre-diabetic or diabetic and obese. And those conditions explain the neuropathy that he was experiencing in his legs. As the medical licensing panel found unanimously, there was no basis to remove Dr. Gottsimo's license. And their threshold question, in my view, is a lower threshold question than probable cause. They were asked whether or not Dr. Gottsimo's practices constituted a threat to the public, not whether it was a crime, not whether it was more likely than not that a crime was committed, but whether or not his practices. They unanimously said no. They could have conditioned his license with probation. They could have removed his ability to write scripts for controlled substances. They did none of that. There were some criticisms individually, but overall, and we have provided that in our appendix, the public discussion on their vote is in there. And overall, they found that in the real world, Dr. Gottsimo's practices, by and large, had some very, very good checks and balances. Those checks and balances were omitted from the presentation that Mr. Garrett gave to the Circuit Court judge. And in Judge McKinney's review of this matter, it is clear that he did not understand the significance of the Medical Licensing Board. This was the equivalent of sort of like a grand jury review of all the testimony that could be gathered of the events that led to their decision to pursue this prosecution. The original prosecution was dealing in controlled substances. But I think they quickly realized they couldn't prove that. So within a few days, they changed it to conspiracy. That is, he was conspiring with the two undercover agents to deal in controlled substances. Now, mind you, after the Medical Licensing Board reached their decision, Dr. Gottsimo, through his attorney, sought an immediate trial. The prosecution continued it twice. And as the record reflects, the original prosecutor, Mr. Buchanan, passed away that summer. So the stand-in prosecutor continued the trial twice until there was an election in November. The new prosecutor comes in and dismisses all charges. Now, what is Dr. Gottsimo's remedy? He's never going to get his reputation back entirely. That's been destroyed by the callous and willful conduct of Mr. Garrett. He's never going to get his professional practice back in gear 100% because that just can't be done. After the fact, once there's a mark on your record, as we all know. So what we have now is this court's role in being the last chance for Dr. Gottsimo to have his day in court. The decisions made by Stephen David, Judge David, in the circuit court were premised upon Mr. Garrett telling the truth. And we have demonstrated in our briefs over and over again that those were not truthful statements. When we took his deposition, we asked him if there were any records at all of his basis for even starting the investigation, and he couldn't find any. He said, I don't think I have any. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time. I think I have approximately 3 minutes for...
You may reserve the remainder of your time. How much time? A minute 30 left.
Thank you.
All right. Farrell?
May it please the court. This court should affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment to the defendants. The doctor has failed to show that Garrett's testimony at the probable cause hearing was made with a reckless disregard for the truth. An officer is immune from liability under Section 1983, even if he lies or omits material information, unless no accurate information sufficient to constitute probable cause attended the statements. Judge McKinney properly identified at least four pieces of evidence from the probable cause hearing that, taken together, supported probable cause. First, Judge McKinney recognized that the doctor prescribed Ritalin to Yorty, and the testimony at the hearing was that Ritalin is not generally treatment for that condition is not generally approved use for Ritalin. Second, the district court noted that Dr. Gatsimos received cash payments, that he preferred cash payments over use of credit cards or checks. And this is supported in the record by the written report of Detective Yorty. She was told she'd get a 30% discount if she paid in cash. And Garrett testified that in his experience that that was a sign of an illegitimate medical practice. The third factor that the district court noted was that the doctor pre-signed his prescription pads, which also is a common evidence of an improper medical practice. In fact, the record shows...
That's pretty common practice, though, isn't it?
The record shows, in this case, a former employee of the doctor's practice testified that every night he pre-signed three prescription pads that were used for narcotics only, and that they tend to be used up every day. Well, if he sees only 20 to 24 patients a day, that's five or six separate prescriptions for controlled substances per person, which can be an indicator that this is an improper medical practice. Finally, the district court found that the doctor prescribed hydrocortisone, or Norco, to Morris, knowing that he received controlled substances from other sources. And what the Garrett's testimony before the Medical Licensing Board actually expanded on what he said at the probable cause hearing, saying that Detective Morris states, "Yes, I'll tell you what. When I was in St. Louis, I traveled to, it was one of the other handlers gave me it. She called it Oxy. The girl gave me some of those Oxy things." And Morris said that he asked for more Norco so I don't have to borrow from people anymore. And the doctor gave him the prescription even though he knew that he was getting OxyContin from other sources. Now, there's a dispute over whether it was one person in St. Louis or a group of people in St. Louis, but even one person giving somebody OxyContin, which is known to be an extremely dangerous drug, is enough that should have given the doctor concern about continuing to prescribe Norco. The doctor insists that Garrett came to the probable cause hearing and deliberately lied and deliberately left out information, deliberately made false statements based on the fact that all of the encounters with the doctor supposedly were recorded and that he listened and that he met with the detectives afterwards. I think this is giving Garrett too much credit for having an excellent memory. He testified at the probable cause hearing that he did not bring any reports. He said he didn't even read them. Now, that might be negligence, but that negligence is not the same as reckless disregard for the truth. At the Medical Licensing Board hearing, he had all of his materials with him, and so he was able to testify in much greater detail. It doesn't matter that the doctor had seemingly innocent explanations afterwards for the conduct that was a concern at the probable cause hearing. That does not negate probable cause. In the reply brief, the doctor suggests that there's evil intent or motive, and that that's an element that should properly be decided by the jury. But what was the motive for improperly targeting this doctor? There's no motive whatsoever. That the state police generally are out to get doctors. Instead, if this court takes a close look at the transcript for the probable cause hearing, Garrett comes across as an overly eager witness who just blurts out in half a page his entire case, getting a lot of stuff wrong, but he did cite at least four factors that taken together did constitute probable cause. So we'd ask this court to affirm, unless there are any other questions.
All right, thank you, Ms. Barrow. Mr. Sutherland.
Motive, two motives. In the last visit, Dr. Gossimo realized that they had not signed the pain contract, asked him to come in. Ms. Yorty comes in using the name Savannah Klein, signs the pain contract. Morris comes in instead of writing down Rick, whatever his name was.
On Morris's last visit, didn't he say his pain was resolved and yet another prescription was written?
Yes, and the prescription that was written was actually a lesser amount, and he was told in that prescription that this was essentially coming down off of your use of it, because like any pain medication, a lot of us have pain experiences in our lives. If the pain is used as needed, then you use less and less of it. If you abuse it, then you could be addicted. And so the doctor's role is to control the amount that is prescribed and to make sure under the pain contract that he asks everyone that he goes to the same pharmacy. And in fact, as the record shows, Mr. Garrett came into him around Valentine's Day of that same year, 2002, and asked him about some 20 people that he thought may be drug seekers and went through the list. And he said if they were going to other doctors, he would cut them off. That's what the record says. So he has a pain contract. And what happens is that Rick comes back, Mr. Morris comes back, and uses his real name, Mike Morris. Somebody realizes that and fires him as a patient. That's the rush to go to the probable cause hearing. And the second thing, which was sort of unusual, is...
This has got to conclude your argument. You can finish your thought.
The second potential motive, which we alluded to at the trial level, is that Mike Garrett's boss was running for sheriff. And he was not involved in the case whatsoever, but he shows up in uniform on the day that Dr. Gossimo is arrested for the circus of TV audience out there. That's the motive.
All right. Thank you to both counsel, and we'll take that case under advisement as well and move to the seventh.